Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen over here in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ron Edwards. So you like that new music, Mr. Edwards, huh?
Man, I'm just arriving from a place long, long ago, far, far away, man. I'm with Luke Skywalker, man, and we're on our way into your galaxy, man. You know, it's been a long time getting here, man. We had to travel, you know, millions and millions, billions of light years, if you will, to paradise. Wow. Isn't that where we're at? We're in paradise?
We're in paradise because our galaxy has 35 million, Mr. Evans.
And those are coins, right? Dollars, coins for the African-American and other communities. You know, Don, let me just say this as we move into tonight's program. We have so much, and we will be with our listening audience for an hour and a half again, the Don and Ron program. But aren't you owed some kind of apology or something?
I think so, Mr. Edwards. I think that the jokers and the charlatans who decided to go on the attack against me when I said, you know, there was not $35 million awarded to the black community. It was $4.2 million to Emerge Community Development. There are $2.4 million in Mr. Edwards. They're called Emerge Community Development Grants. $1.2 million goes to Twin Cities Rise for a grant. $1 million goes to Minneapolis Foundation North at Work Grant. No one knows what that is. No one can even explain that yet. And $2 million goes to Minnesota Redevelopment Grant Program.
We gave these numbers 2 weeks ago. I thought people realized after we had gone into the governor's website, if you will, legally, you know, we're not the NSA, and you gave those numbers, and yet you were, you know, really blasted here over the last couple of weeks. But now, I'm sorry, I need to correct you because, there's Sabathany, there's the Stairstep Foundation under the Dr. Alfred Babington Johnson, the Reverend Doctor. Then there is our the Urban League. Am I correct?
I mean, where?
Well, they're supposed to be the recipients because their supporters have been saying that they received $4.2 million. Now, you indicated and identified allocations that take all that up, and so you must be mistaken.
No, Mr. Edwards, you know, it's all in black and white. And, you know, and readers are leaders. That's why you and I are leaders, you know, and we say that humbly here over the air. But the thing is, I'm looking at the document from the state and from the city of Minneapolis, because the state has to tap the city of Minneapolis on the shoulder and say that, hey, we just gave $4.2 million for the Emerge Community Development Grants. And then they also have to tell the city of Minneapolis where it's going. Now, $1.2 million, Mr. Edwards, according to the report from the city, this is not anything that I wrote. It's a long document. Anybody can get it. You can actually find that document at ourblacknews.com right now and download the PDF. So $1.2 million, it says, is earmarked for Twin Cities Rise grant. Don't know what that is, Mr. Edwards. I know what Twin Cities Rise is, but I don't know what the details of $1.2 million is. And then $1 million to the Minneapolis Foundation North at Work Grant.
That's where I have to. How does a foundation of the magnitude and fiscal portfolio receive $1 million of state taxpayers' money? I'm not understanding, Mr. Allen.
Well, it's very confusing because the name is Minneapolis Foundation North at Work Grant. And I've called the Minneapolis Foundation on several occasions asking what that means. Who is this? What is Minneapolis Foundation North at Work grant that's listed on the state website, the city website, that has $1 million allocated under the
Is that the foundation now under the leadership of former Mayor R.T. Ryback?
No, I think Ryback went to the Minneapolis Foundation, but again, Mr. Edwards, this says Minneapolis Foundation North at Work.
Now, Mr. Allen, I've never heard of a foundation called Minneapolis Foundation North. In fact, I think that may be a name infringement, because the Minneapolis Foundation, under the leadership of former Mayor R.T. Ryback, has been in business for 100 years. Now, you can't, you can play the game if you're doing some kind of fraud and et cetera, but you can't have an entity receiving money with actually the same name as a current and present entity. I mean, I guess you can do whatever you want to do in America, but that's why I was always puzzled. The Minneapolis Foundation North, okay? Now, that's not to be confused then with the Minneapolis Foundation. So that's what you're trying to do.
I don't know. I can't answer yay or nay, because I'm just as confused as anybody reading this piece of paper. You know, we might just have to ask, you know, the mayor, because she might know. And then the third one, Mr. Edwards, is $2 million to the Minnesota Redevelopment Grant Program. And that sounds like a statewide program, because it says the Minnesota Redevelopment Grant Program. It doesn't say North Minneapolis Urban League, Stairstep Foundation, or Zabathany. And one thing, Mr. Edwards, you know, we like to educate people here on the Ron and Don Show is I want to let folks know, you have people in our community talking about $35 million, and they're talking about $4.2 million, and they can't decide which one they want to stick with. But let's just explain this. This money comes from the state of Minnesota, the state legislature, Democrats, Independents, Republicans, that whole group, House and Senate, decided that this is the allocation that they were going to give North Minneapolis, or Emerge at this, we'll just say Emerge at this point. And so this money is tied to regulations and statutes that are equivalent to having handcuffs on if used the wrong way. Mr. Edwards, I do have to tell you this, but I need to go reach for something here in the studio while I'm talking to you, so you know exactly what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
For lunch today, downtown St. Paul at Afro Deli, I had an opportunity to have lunch with Ramona A.I. Avani, who's the state deputy auditor and general counsel, and Miss Rebecca Otto. And so I was very confused about
Miss Otto is the state auditor, right?
Yes, she is the state auditor, and I had
not
an opportunity
to be confused
to have
with the legislative
with
auditor. But the state auditor, elected, she's elected. In fact, she's been on our program a couple times in the last couple years, right? So you were having lunch with these two ladies, including the state auditor. Now, okay, we want to clarify, Mr. Allen. We have to clarify for our listening audience across the world. Go right ahead.
Yeah, the state auditor and the deputy state auditor and the general counsel, Ramona I. Advani, A-D-V-A-I. And she gave me her card. Very friendly, very nice, very knowledgeable people, both of these ladies.
Okay.
And you know, they're not going to say anything negative, and they didn't. But, you know, I was given an opportunity to read the signs and the signals that said, dig deeper. They said, you probably need to look at that a little bit closer. They wouldn't get into numbers. They wouldn't get into facts or something I could walk away with. But, Mr. Edwards, I think that everybody in the black community should be concerned about this whole sideshow, freak show between Zabathany, Stairstep Foundation, and, of course, the Minneapolis Urban League. And we really need to question the Minneapolis Urban League's integrity on why weren't they given the opportunity to take
I was a longtime leader of the Urban League and built that organization up. Now, I want to be protective of an organization because we don't even have an Urban League anymore in St. Paul.
Oh, no.
Because of the same kind of, you know, possible shenanigans. But let me just say, in defense, if you will, of the president of the Urban League of Minneapolis, that Mr. Stephen Belton, because it was Mr. Belton on Sunday that corrected the continued misinformation when he gave a honest narrative of how much money was really in play. Because the host of the program on the Urban Contemporary radio station kept talking about $35 million, $4 million, $50 million, and all that. And Mr. Belton did correct that. I think we must be fair. We must be fair.
Yeah, we have
indicating
to
it was Mr. Belton who cleared the air. Now, that then takes us to your luncheon this afternoon where you met with the Minnesota State Auditor, an elected office under the Constitution of the State of Minnesota. The assistant auditor, her deputy, in other words, who is also, as you said, general counsel to the office of the auditor. And could we assume that you were discussing the allocation that started out to be $100 million, then went to $75 million, $50 million, you know, whatever. I don't know what it is.
I was a little bit concerned because – because there was a young lady there, Mr. Edwards, who was very troubled, a St. Paul resident, who worked
now, was
as
this a private
paralegal.
Luncheon, Mr. Allen? Was this a private luncheon?
This is a very private.
Or was
private.
This a luncheon being put on by leadership or something?
No, this was a private luncheon. This was
I
private.
I see, okay.
This was definitely
we need
private.
To be concise. We need to be concise with great specificity because we know that, that your enemies are out there waiting on you.
yeah, this was a private luncheon, and it was very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because, if you look at the reports, even if you look at the raw report before you even get to the final legislative report, you have Emerge Community Development.
Now, you keep mentioning Emerge, Mr. Allen. I have to play the role of the Grand Inquisitor and Examiner. Emerge is who, and it is under the leadership of whom? Because the statement was
Emerge
made, the criticism of Emerge only takes place because Emerge, the administrative head of Emerge, is a white person, a white man. And so we're not on that track. Am I correct?
No, we're not on that track at all. I mean, I haven't even
mentioned Emerge
the,
is what
the
kind
guy
of organization
name.
Located where?
It's a community development, supposedly, organization located, has hubs everywhere, but I think the main office is right off Emerson there in Broadway, back in that little castle-looking building.
Okay.
And I know they have kind of satellites spread out through the Somali community, the black community. I think Hispanic Latino has some touch with Emerge. And so they're ingrained. Emerge, we'll put it like this, Mr. Edwards. If the Urban League functioned correctly, like it did when it was under your oversight, they would be calling the Urban League Emerge. Because the money would have probably went to the Urban League. Okay, but so they're in all the communities, minority ethnics, and I guess they're doing the mission that the Urban League is supposed to do. And but their paperwork is straight. So, again, I get back to my original question, why wasn't the Minneapolis Urban League asked to take the lead on this big chunk of $4.2 million? And, I mean, there's a lot of variables and derivatives that pop up. I don't want to say without having facts, because we are a factual show. We don't deal in Facebook fantasy land. But the thing is, this money seems to be tagged, Mr. Edwards, for other agencies. And, again, getting back on my point about the Minnesota state statutes and regulations, now, the leader of Emerge, from what I was schooled on, can give them a check for $5,000, and they say they're going to do something.
Well, why, Mr. Allen, why just $5,000? I'm not understanding. Why just $5,000?
Because you have to put out a request, RFP, request for proposal.
Request for proposal.
Anything.
Okay. I mean, what we need to enlighten our listening audience. Go right ahead.
Yeah, it has to be a request for a proposal, anything up and above that, because you just can't get $4.2 million. And say the $2 million for the Minnesota Redevelopment Grant Program is the money set aside for the Urban League, Stairstep, and Sebastian to get at. Well, they're not exclusive to that money. That has to be put out in a public RFP that says that, hey, if you're a nonprofit agency, this is what we want done. Answer this RFP, answer these questions, submit your proposals. So
and this would
no
be,
telling,
I have to interrupt Mr. Allen as in playing the role of special inquisitor and prosecutor. This is under color of law. what you're saying. This is not something some guys made up at the local cafe or bar. This is what you are saying. You are reading from statutory language, which indicates under color of law, this is the sequential steps that have to be taken. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir.
All right. Thank
In every
you.
Way,
thank
shape,
you.
And form. You are,
okay,
you are correct.
Okay.
And so,
okay.
And so with that said, and Mr. Edwards, and you know that this year in the legislative session, Senator Jeff Hayden, the African-American or black American senator from St. Paul.
South Minneapolis.
But anyway, you know that he did not support the Council on Black Minnesotans legislative agenda at the time that it went up. He
yes,
didn't even want to do a
that.
Hearing
had,
on it.
We had a guest
yes.
On this program. Yes, yes, yes. All right. Okay.
Yes. But he supported the Asian Council's legislative agenda.
Okay.
And I'm just being text some stuff here while I'm talking to you. But, you know, we had a candidate on our show that was running for against Bobby Joe Champion.
Senator
she,
Bobby Joe
her
Champion.
Name was
yes.
Senator, yeah, she was running against Senator Bobby Joe Champion. Well, it come to find out, Mr. Edwards, that the Asian Council endorsed Bobby Joe Champion up and over and above their own candidate, their own cultural relevant candidate.
Well, racial, so. Actually, because she was an Asian, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yes, you are correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so what that does, if you look at all this money, if they're doing those kind of things, and putting money in certain areas in certain people's hands, then why, I guess my question is why the Urban League would not be privileged to get an amount of money to try to do whatever they do. Now, I already know that the Minneapolis Urban League does not have a highway heavy or a training facility to handle what they're talking about. Anywhere in the state of Minnesota. So
okay.
The question comes up again, how do you train people to work at MnDOT? Every RFP, Mr. Edwards, that is coming out from D, the main points are...
Let's be fair. Couldn't the Urban League have a compact with Summit Academy under Mr. King? I mean, couldn't they have a contract
that would be the smart thing
and have a relationship?
I think...
Contract with Mr. King to train Urban League apprentices and et cetera? I mean, isn't that a possibility?
I think that would be the smart thing to do. It makes a lot of sense to me, but, I mean, I haven't seen it, and it would make sense that a partnership like that, even though they're less than a mile away from each other, would be the smart thing to do. But – you
and
know,
now
we don't
Fair
see
Step
that.
Does what? Fair Step provides training in the area of what? Tool and die and things like that?
I don't know. I'm not sure what Fair Step does. I haven't seen anything. I know Fair Step received $190,000 plus from the state of Minnesota's MSURE to make sure that there was some kind of assistance with black folks getting this MSURE insurance that went up over 70%. But we didn't see any effect to that. But I did find out from the president of Stairstep, Mr. Alfred, Reverend Dr. Alfred Babington
Johnson. Reverend
Doctor,
Reverend
that,
Doctor, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Reverend Doctor, that they made a video, Mr. Edwards, that they made a video. And I must have not seen the video. And my reply
and the
was,
video was about what? Health
I don't
insurance
know.
Or what?
I don't know. No. Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you. I've never seen
video
it. Cost, so
what,
they said they made
or what?
Well, that's what they're I guess that he's alluding to that. I'm saying, well, in my reply, you know, subtle as I could be, I says, hell, you did a video for $193,000? I could do that for $50,000. You could have kept the rest of the money. I kinda snickered and walked away.
Okay.
You know.
mm-hmm. Okay. So
well, yeah,
back to the overall $4.2 million that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
That Now, Emerge, the organization known as Emerge, which obviously is like a clearinghouse, though different than Sabathany, which is just a clearinghouse. And when I say clearinghouse, it provides space for a variety of organizations and et cetera. So the bottom line is, how much of the $4.2 million has been distributed to the residents of the African American and other communities and the North Side? And the reason I ask that is that I'm aware that and documentation has been provided as an example to the city of Minneapolis that there were negotiations all during the spring and summer to try to bring an end to hoops. All the violence that has continued to grip us. Now, I have written a couple of columns and have spoke about it on my television program. I'm a little bit disturbed and uneasy over the fact that with all this prosperity that is now in play and in existence in the African-American community, why we continue to have all this violence.
Well, there's this. We have to look at, I think, Mr. Edwards, the key thing would be to look at who's getting the prosperity. Where are these dollars landing? Because we already know that the youth don't have work. They go try to apply at McDonald's, and you either got to be an adult or speak Spanish. And so that's a no-go. You have some of the highest unemployment rates in the city, in areas of North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis, where black folks and Native Americans live. And so,
and Hispanic,
Latinos,
yeah.
And so, I mean, with that said, I mean, what really can $4.2 million do other than them giving everybody $100 in the city?
Well,
I don't know how long that would last.
We're being negative here. We're being negative on the Don and Ron program because I assume that there's a plan. So you haven't touched on the plan, and I assume that there was an economic development distribution plan, and it certainly had to be in play with regards to the negotiations that the city was being told was taking place to try to stem the tide of violence. By the way, we've had six homicides now with the shooting this morning in South Minneapolis. We've had six shootings, six homicides, and we're not Chicago or Milwaukee, by the way. Six homicides in a week's time, including three over the weekend, including another African-American woman shot and killed in crossfire at 38th and Queen. So, but I was hearing on the Special Oversight Department of Justice Committee that I'm on, I was hearing that these negotiations were going on, and that looked like some progress was being made, and primarily because young men and women were being told that there was work for them, jobs, if you will, training, and such. So I assume, Mr. Allen, because you had asked that question, I understand, on an urban contemporary radio station Sunday, and they were somewhat critical that you would even have the audacity to ask the question about, I think you used the term, what was the split?
What was the skid?
Yeah, what was the split? And you asked the question. I mean, how much were the three organizations getting? And no one could answer it. I'm surprised that they couldn't. I mean, it should be no problem. So what you're indicating analysis is the $2 million is basically what should have been split amongst the three organizations, right? And are they able to acquire a finder's fee or something like that?
Well, I think what happens here, if Emerge is the massa of the $4.2 million and the money is split between Twin Cities Rise grant and the Minneapolis Foundation North at Work grant and the Minnesota Redevelopment grant, we have to see how the Urban League and Sabathany and Stairstep fit into this. You know, I mean, was there some predetermined negotiations where, we're going to work with...
But, Mr. Allen, you've already said that by law, Emerge could only give $5,000 without proper notification of the development of a proposal upon request. So, well, are these organizations, are they in the process of borrowing money or something like that? Because I'm aware that on one of your websites you pointed out that there was a inter-agency compact between Dr. King or Louis King and Summit with the Urban League of Minneapolis for a, I guess, a fairly significant amount of money.
Yeah.
Well, talk about
yeah,
that just a little bit so that we're clear on that.
Oh, from what I some sources that I have is that the Minneapolis Urban League under Steve Belton is in debt to an agency, Summit Academy OIC, for a little bit of money. And it might be significant, might be not significant, but from what I understand from my sources, it's becoming a point of contention and some bad attitudes, and some people aren't really happy at all. Okay, Mr. Edwards, I just found this that North at Work is part of that Northside Funders group. And this is shocking because I didn't see this before, but I'm going to stay current with the updates. Yeah, and it's men who live in the North Side surrounded by trusted organization leaders in the African-American community, they will be referred to North at Work by churches, friends, and others who believe. So this North at Work group might be something under Alfred Babington Johnson. I'm going to hit the leadership, and I will tell you. I see a former Minneapolis Foundation.
Let's get it right now.
Employee.
Minneapolis Foundation or Minneapolis Foundation North? Because you.
No, I'm saying I see a former Minneapolis Foundation employee there that works for this Northside Funders group.
But that's where that's the reason, Mr. Allen, I'm asking for clarification, because we also have it play now, according to what you've said, and our programs are on demand, and so you can always is that there's an organization called Minneapolis Foundation North. Now, I asked the question again. Who are they?
They are a group of women here in the city that all work for, it looks like, other agencies. We have one person that works for the Tawana Black is the executive director. Sarah Hernandez is the program officer, the McKnight Foundation, and co-chair of the Northside Funders Group. Joanne Stately, Director of Impact Strategy, Economic Vitality, the Minneapolis Foundation, Co-Chair, Northside Funders Group. Tammy Noteman, Administrative and Communications Associate, Northside Funders Group. Crystal Cabello Sucedo is a fellow, Northside Funder Group. Lisa Kisk, Chief of Staff, Northside Funder Group. And Maureen Ramez, Director of Integrated Strategies, Northside Funders Group.
All right, this
and
is
so
a group of
actually,
women of different ethnic and racial composition, and they are headquartered where? Where can they be found? How do these young men and women in the communities of color find them to reach out and be led to economic opportunity, jobs, training, and et cetera. So what's their address? Is there a phone number?
1015 North 4th Avenue, Suite 202, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55405. And their phone number is 612-351-8200.
Now, you say they're on 4th Street?
Yeah, 1015 North 4th Street, right? Not too far from International Market Square. And let me just pull this out here a little bit. I'll tell you exactly where they are.
Well, International Market Square is right there on Lindale and Glenwood, right?
Yeah. And I'm looking
so they're
at
down there in that area?
Yes, yes, they are.
Okay.
Yep, I'm looking at it right now. That's where they are. They're in that area. And so it's very interesting because I'm looking at the map here, and I can't – oh, wow. Okay, lock my computer up. That's beautiful. But anyway, Mr. Edwards, Yeah, it's, the address is 1015 North 4th Street. Excuse me, 612-351-8200 is their telephone number. If people want to call them up and ask what's going on and where the money is.
Well, I would certainly encourage us to post the phone number and address and suite number on the Facebook accounts and et cetera, so that many of our young men and women can find employment. So they are dependent upon Emerge facilitating. And what was that amount again, Mr. Allen? $2 million or $1.2 million? Or
yeah, $2 million. $2 million. $2 million. $2 million, Mr. Edwards. $2 million.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And you read the names of the staff, and all female staff, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I assume they've been working
exactly.
with many of our young women and men, particularly over this violent summer. Is that right?
I mean, I can't tell. I can't call that one.
Which with all the violence that's been going on, and particularly with African-American women being killed and shot and et cetera, I would assume that, women's organizations would be in the forefront of speaking out about that. I assume we should be concerned about that.
I mean, Mr. Edwards, I mean, if we look at it from a proactive point of view, we haven't had any press conferences from any black agencies that I'm aware of.
Well,
I
know that,
council.
But maybe we're not aware of all things. I mean, people, I can hear the naysayers indicating that our ears don't hear all that there is. You know, there are the soft breezes of summer and fall, and the soft sound of the waves and et cetera. So I'm just trying to draw out of what it is that is at play, because I'm just aware myself, Mr. Allen, that when it came time this past summer to initiate programs and activities that would have alleviated some of the violence, maybe saved some lives, that nobody was able to direct many of these young men and women. And so I'm just trying to get the feel, just want to be responsible here on the Ron and Don program. With regards to this, but again, I go back to the fact that I just think that you're owed an apology. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when we first started talking about this, folks were saying didn't know what you're talking about, and then folks were saying the money was there, then folks said the money wasn't, and that Mike Wynn did not ever get the money, and et cetera. Now, you know, we're hearing of documentation identifying particular players, individuals, and organizations, and et cetera. So, wow, this is quite a deal. By the way, the phone lines are open. Let's give that open. There may be people out there that want to question us. Though I imagine a lot of folks are watching the World Series. You know what I mean? And other kinds of television programs. But phone lines are open.
Okay,
give that number.
Yeah, we do have a. Yeah, we do have a caller, Mr. Edwards. Let's see if we can
get
him on.
All right, let's get the caller in, and you can give out the number. They can wait in the queue.
Caller, you're live on air. Go ahead. Yeah, he's right here. He's on. He's live. Go ahead, caller.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, fine, sir. How you doing? You're going to report to us. I understand that we should indicate congratulations to the NAACP, Jason Soule, the new president-elect of the NAACP. Is that correct, Mr. Nelson?
Absolutely. I was just going to say, I know you gentlemen joined me in congratulating new President Soule in his unanimous victory last night.
So he was on the polls, is that correct? I understand he was on the polls.
Yeah, on the polls.
Okay.
On the polls, absolutely.
So did they make a motion for? I really shouldn't say this, but I guess they understand Robert's Rules of Order. I mean, so they cast a white ballot?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll see it. Yes, sure. So you know, I will see now what the new leadership brings about and what direction he'll be taking the Minneapolis chapter of NAACP. There. So now I'm excited to see for him and his new endeavors, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. Now his cabinet consists of whom? Can you share with us?
You know
names?
What? You know what, Boss Edwards? I am not sure of his cabinet. I do understand, per the outgoing secretary, that he will be allowed to pick his cabinet.
Wait a minute, Mr. Nelson. I'm a little confused. Pick his cabinet? You mean first vice president, secretary, treasurer? I thought by the Constitution of the NAACP, those had to be elected.
Well, as did I, and so I was a little surprised, and maybe she was misspeaking, but she did confirm to me that, yes, he probably will be able to pick his some of his cabinets. If there would be no one, they would be volunteering for those or run for said positions of first vice president and et cetera.
Well,
et cetera.
Let me ask this, sir. I don't mean to be curt in any regards, but so why bother to have had an election committee and had, quote-unquote, an election?
Your guess is as good as mine. Your guess.
No, I'm just, I'm
I
just
think,
a,
I think, I,
it's
oh,
just an old timer, you know, walking slow and talking slow. I'm just wondering why even bother to have created and elected an election commission last month. Boy, that's a bomb. That's a bombshell. So, Mr.
Hey,
gentlemen,
we might have an answer. We might have an answer right here. Just a second. We all, hold on, Mr. Nelson. Carl, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Don?
Yeah, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
I'm just getting in. This is Angela. I'm trying to listen in. Go ahead with somebody
okay,
else.
Okay, I'll put you in the queue. Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't think that person was going to be able to tell us. I think Mr. Nelson has the best information at this particular point. We want to thank him. We do understand that that some of the media was asking because many were surprised that Nakimi Levy-Pounds, the past president, did not even bother to have her name placed in nomination. So I'm not sure what that means. I think Mr. Nelson is kind of giving us a hint that there's going to be like, what, a new direction, a new agenda?
You know what? Again, I'm not sure. Knowing him, he's a very good brother. So, you know, again, it remains to be seen the direction in which it would take. It sounded like, though, sounded like that criminal justice will continue to be a main focus of what will be going on the agenda.
Criminal
again.
Justice? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know I saw, and I received a call from a couple places around the country. I know I saw both my colleague, Mr. Allen, and Mr. Soul on a criminal justice program, actually, Monday night, if I'm not mistaken, on Fatal Attraction. Time. Is that what it was? Fatal Attraction.
It was
murder of a 15-year-old African American girl who was actually was burnt almost alive in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah.
And I saw Mr. Soul identified as an activist and et cetera. So. Okay, that happened in 2014. So I guess, well, I guess it will be explained. So all right then. Well, so we have not had the manifesto offered on what the direction of the. By the way, who swore in Mr. Soul after the vote last night or the unanimous by consent? Was he sworn in?
I'm not sure if the. Voter.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Has yet been certified. I'm not sure, Mr. Edwards. But you know, again, it remains to be seen. You guys are asking a lot of pointed questions today. You know, again, hopefully now a lot of questions will be asked about some of the money and some of the answers that the black community is not getting about services that we are supposed to get from the monies that has been divvied out and. There doesn't seem to be a lot of transparency, but, you know, hopefully now, like Mr. Allen said there, you know, we need to have leadership speaking up, asking those questions of where is it going and why aren't we?
But you can't. You're not supposed to. Supposed to ask those questions. You're attacking people when you ask them accountability questions or you think critical. You're not supposed to ask anybody any questions about anything in the black community because you let white people into our business. We're just supposed to let it fly. I don't think the money's divvied up. I think the money's sitting in a bank account somewhere gaining interest. And I don't think anyone's come up with a plan because, Mr. Edwards, you were listening to that public radio station the same time I was, and they were talking about the money for 2017, going to the 2017 legislature talking about we need some money for something. And I don't know if they think that we're stupid, but it's November. That money was given to you in June, signed out with ready for July 1st.
June 1. The governor signed the declaration on June 1. That money was being distributed in all during the month of June into July and everything else. I don't know. It's difficult to say because the NAACP of Minneapolis and St. Paul, though they submitted proposals. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, they submitted proposals, Mr. Allen, under the Republican agenda for these monies, if I remember correctly, because there was quite a bit of anger that the two NAACPs had come in under the Republican auspices and asking and demanding the $100 million, then $75 million. Nobody talks about that anymore. So, Mr. Nelson, anything else for us? Because this is kind of, certainly raises the need for conversation and something Mr. Allen said earlier in the program. What's the plan? It's November now. We're moving into November, and, will we have a plan in place by the early spring? By the way, 2017 is an election year in the city of Minneapolis. Oops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Allen is right on to ask the question, what is the plan? And it's a fair question, no matter what political party you belong to. It's a really fair question to ask, what's the plan now? And it's a basic question. One that deserves a truthful, meaningful answer that sets us on our way. And truthfully, anyone in the black community, all we ask for is transparency to figure out. Because if you ain't gonna give it to us, fine, just let us know we ain't gonna get it. But don't dangle the stake in our face and then snatch it away when MAFTA goes away. So. I think that's your
party.
They're better than that.
Well, I understand the conversations about public safety. So, to your knowledge, Mr. Nelson, was there any discussion, kind of a state of the branch, by the newly elected president on how the public safety item and approach is going to be approached, if you will. I know in St. Paul's example, Jeff Martin and NAACP in St. Paul worked closely with Mayor Coleman over there and trying to reorganize the Police Civilian Internal Review Commission. That's the total name. So are they going to be doing something like that to the best of your knowledge, Mr. Nelson? I don't want to put you on the spot because, until you're appointed, if you ever appoint me, you're not a member of the cabinet, if you will.
Yeah, true.
Only those thoughts are in the minds only of Mr. Soul. But how are we going to approach the public safety issues? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, I have no idea. But I think that knowing him, I think the fact that he has some relationships with city officials in Minneapolis, and so I hope that those things continue. I look forward to seeing what happens. I have no doubt that he will reach out, hopefully, more than his predecessor to help bridge the gaps between the black community and the policing community as well. So we'll see.
Okay, all right.
I'm excited.
Mike, for you to stay by your telephone there because I'm receiving a text message, Mr. Allen. Getting a text message.
Yes.
We have a call coming in as pertaining to the latest white supremacist terrorist act here in the Midwest, with another Muslim being brutally murdered just outside of Twin Cities. So, all right, Mr. Nelson, kind of stick around if you get a chance. All right.
Will do. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. Mr.
Okay,
Allen,
Mr.
we should
have
that
call
holding in the
Hello? Caller's live. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yes, another caller is.
Yes.
All right. Yes. Caller, I think you're coming to us from the southern part of the upper Midwest.
Yeah, I'm from Missouri.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and actually, I was going to ask you about that very thing that you were talking about, just the text message that you got about the foreign exchange student in, Wisconsin, I guess it's Menominee, Wisconsin, who was killed,
that's correct,
a Muslim.
Sir.
Yes. Yeah.
A Saudi. He's from the,
Saudi.
The royal family.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah,
the
I was
royal
just...
family.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I know that they say that they don't have any suspects or anything at this point, or...
You're correct, sir. They have no suspects. He was beaten to death in the streets of Menominee, Wisconsin, which is just down the road from Eau Claire. In fact, the hospital in Menominee declined to receive him and sent him on to Eau Claire because they maintained that his injuries were so severe. But... he is deceased. The Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. has made inquiry, but the physician of Menominee, the Menominee authorities, the county sheriff, and the state of Wisconsin's criminal investigation division is that they don't have any suspects.
Well, now, do they have they said anything about a hate crime or anything?
The chief there says that it's impossible to even discuss hate crime because they don't know what was on the minds of the perpetrators.
Oh.
Of course, I guess you never will if you don't have the perpetrators in custody.
Yeah, exactly.
According to the police reports, after beating the Saudi citizen, he was a Saudi now, so we don't get confused about nationalities. He was a Muslim. In fact, as he was, his head was being stomped into the ground, a couple of the white perpetrators screamed out, death to Muslims, if you will. Mm-hmm. On the website of the one of the newest white supremacist group, the American White Commandos. That's an interesting name, Mr. Allen.
Yeah.
The white, that they have indicated that this is a continuation of retaliation for the events in St. Cloud, Minnesota, at the crossroads, as well as actions against Muslims, including Garden City, Kansas, which I appreciate. In fact, a couple weeks ago, you gave us an update on that.
Yeah.
We know that the authorities are extremely concerned in Garden City, now going all the way down to Garden City, because there is still talk. There's still chatter, that the military term that they use, that there's still chatter on the websites that there will be violence the day after the election, and that would be a week from today.
Yeah, that was the that was the original plan, I believe, too.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was spoken to by the U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Kansas, as well as the in charge FBI agent in charge, who happened to be an African American. But what is coming out of Sandpoint, Idaho, as we speak, is that a applauding of their white commandos in Menominee, Wisconsin, in bringing death, violent death, to another quote unquote a Muslim, if you will. And, of course, coming on the heels of the young Nigerian who mysteriously just kind of fell into the river there in Winona, which is all the part of that area. The white American white commandos maintain that they're on the move and that they have been coming into this area as well as other places around the country for what they call selective action. So, yes, sir. I hope that that helps you out on that. But, yes,
we have
had another Muslim brutally murdered.
Okay. Well, now, I thought that – now, are these militia groups and white supremacist groups coming in? Because I always thought of Minnesota and Wisconsin area as being very liberal, very open-minded liberal area coming.
Not really, sir. We've had militia groups here for quite some time. In fact, some of the most violent militia groups actually engaged the FBI in the 1980s in fierce firefights in North Dakota. There were a number of serious firefights. There have been problems over in Wisconsin, if you will, that particular area, Menominee and up around through there and back up twice toward Rice Lake and et cetera, has been a hotbed of white supremacists. And Minnesota has known a number of white supremacist groups, if you will. And we've had a number of incidents right here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul where there have been incidents, death to Muslims. There have been shootings. In fact, we had over at University of Minnesota, Mr. Allen, you remember, chime in here. Chime in with us here. We had a couple of Muslims gunned down, if you will, and wounded by white supremacists, if you will. And our law enforcement, et cetera, went to great lengths. We also had neo-Nazi gunmen shoot five African-American males, back in mid-November of last year during the occupation of the 4th Precinct. But as Mr. Allen has said a couple times, these are things that, you know, we've basically been told we shouldn't talk about.
Well, just to give you a little bit, there hasn't been any real news out of Garden City, although there was, I guess, a group called the Kansas Flatlanders Militia.
Oh my God!
They said that they were approached by these three gentlemen who were indicted in Garden City, and that they rejected their applications for joining their militia, and. So that's been about the only news out of Garden City recently, out of that area. So they're basically claiming that these guys were just sort of rogue elements in their militia.
Oh, who were planning
a
very sophisticated bombing and had gotten their hands on nitroglycerin and weapons.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Boy, if any black group had done that, they mamas and daddies and everybody else would be in jail right now.
We
are going through a very turbulent piece, kind of would inject a little bit of sports because we have a situation here where, in fact, the University of Minnesota's football team, which, you know, had a fairly decent record, has been decimated by the dismissal but the dismissal of African-American football players for just random kind of allegations of Negro wrongdoing. Yesterday in a district court here, a white judge named Dickerstein refused to reconsider a trespassing order against five African-American football players, all basically starters on the University of Minnesota team. And then this morning, the university announced that the number two receiver on the Minnesota Gopher football team was being put off the team because of violation of team policy, whatever that means. Mr. Rodney Smith, outstanding player, junior from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And so basically, I don't know, we've had probably about eight or nine black players have been thrown off the team because of allegations of misconduct, fraternization with white women and things like that.
Yeah.
And, of course, this comes on the heels of significant tensions within the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I heard that. Was it Norv Turner or was fired? He quit then, right? He wasn't fired. He was quit.
There's controversy, sir, and, of course, our phone lines will be open to anybody who wants to chit-chat with us. Norv Turner, it is said that he allegedly resigned early this morning after meeting with Coach Zimmer, but some of the information has come from the Kansas City Chiefs organization there in Kansas City, Missouri. They apparently have some contacts and et cetera. You know, players know each other. I mean, so, you know, they go to the same colleges and et cetera. But apparently there was a Monday night after the game in Chicago, that terrible game. The Vikings were really embarrassed. There was some kind of confrontation, involving Norm Turner, his son, who is the quality control coach, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Possibly the some black players and possibly defensive line coach George Edwards. No relationship, sir.
Okay. All right.
But there was some kind of confrontation, and even though at his press conference this morning, Coach Zimmerman had dark glasses on, he said early Tuesday morning he had had some kind of procedure. He had had some problem with his eye. But sources are indicating that there was actually a fight within the locker room at Soldier Field after the game Monday night. Mm-hmm. And even, in fact, there was some reference to niggers and things like that. And it led to some kind of action. It's possibly going to have to be taken against a young Mr. Turner. I mean, this is what the rumor is, but I said it couldn't be because Coach Zimmerman at his press conference this morning had nothing to say other than Norm Turner was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is very odd in the middle of a season like that.
All the big experts, particularly the white experts, are definitely saying that. It's very unusual, particularly a coordinator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Normally you dump maybe an assistant coach or et cetera, but Norm Turner was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But apparently some things were said. Some of the defensive team, which is predominantly black, of course. The other problem is that you have right now the Vikings coaching staff is very, very much predominantly white. In fact, that's the new trend here. Mr. Allen, who doesn't follow sports as much as we do, but the Minnesota Timberwolves have basically an all-white staff now, if you will. They fired the black general manager last year. They got rid of the black coach. They got rid of a lot of other black assistant coaches and et cetera. The Minnesota Twins only have one African-American as a coach. They don't have anybody really as scouts or anything like that. The Twins had a chance to hire a very high-profile African-American as their baseball executive and declined. So we're kind of whitish up here, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Yeah, well, see, it kind of goes back to what I was wondering about liberal Minnesota. You know, Minnesota Twins have one coach on the Minnesota Twins.
One coach on the Minnesota Twins. Really only one paid coach on the Minnesota Timberwolves. And as we said, mostly all the blacks were let out last year, and only one new one was hired, Pinckney, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, with the football team, no one talks about it. In fact, it's kind of a family affair because one of the linebacking coaches is also the son of Coach Zimmer. So coaches get their sons and relatives hired. You know, we're not supposed to talk about that either.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, there's that sort of lack of black coordinators, offensive, defensive coordinators, both.
That's right, because if you don't hire them, then it makes it more difficult for them to present themselves as head coaches material. Oops.
Yeah.
NFL was supposed to be addressing that. They really clearly haven't, if you will. And Minnesota has really become a glaring example of how I hate to use this word, sir, but how the purges are carried out, and African-American assistant coaches and coaches and et cetera are purged, if you will. In fact, people were overjoyed when the young, dynamic black quarterback, Terry Bridgewater, was injured before the start of the season. And as soon as they brought in Sam Bradford, who I think you folks down there in that part of the upper Midwest, he was out of Oklahoma. Nice kid, nice guy, but has some problems. He doesn't have mobility and et cetera. Well, but they were saying that, hell, they could get rid of Teddy Bridgewater and definitely could get rid of Adrian Peterson. Who Norv Turner only knew how to run Adrian Peterson up the middle, even though Adrian Peterson was the leading rusher in the NFL last year with over 1,400 yards running behind a – they actually like to use the term decimated. What basically has happened is that they basically got rid of all the black offensive linemen. They have one young black offensive lineman, but he was taken to the cleaners Monday. They brought in Jake Long, who already is a problem in the clubhouse, as we are being told by reliable sources. Mm-hmm. He came in, had one day of practice, and came in on the second play of the game in that beating that they took in Philadelphia. So there are some problems up here, if you will. But, again, we're not supposed to talk about it. I imagine my associate, Mr. Allen, is getting some text messages and et cetera from people screaming because, man, they love their Vikings up here, you know. And I'll show you how good it is. Mr. Allen and I were talking about this. There was a luncheon for Negro leadership on October 6th at that beautiful stadium that was built without any black folks working on it. Mr. Allen has touched on that a couple of times here. And lo and behold, I don't know that you'd be aware of this, Steve, but they fed black folks real good, man. They was eating filet mignon, sirloin, crab, and et cetera. And do you know that none of that food had been paid for? Mr. Allen posted something this morning. Mr. Allen, give us your observation. He posted something this morning on a news article which talked in terms that the minority vendors at the U.S. Bank Stadium have not been paid. The company out of Philadelphia said, we forgot to pay to certain vendors, and you're right, we didn't pay none of the minorities. They should have just said we didn't pay none of the Negroes. Mm-hmm. And so they blame it on a clerical.
Mr. Arrow, they're blaming it on a clerical error.
Yes, sir. They sure did.
Them black people look like commas. We better not pay them.
But let me just say this, and I'm glad my associate and co-host brought this up, because there was a meeting late last week as this thing began to break, and the chairwoman of the Sports Facility Authority, which has statutory responsibility to make sure everything goes right, she pretended that she didn't know anything about it. That's not true, because 3 weeks ago, 500 beer and other kind of vendors, I'm talking about, you know, the people that really have to hustle hard and et cetera, were terminated because they have not been running security checks. Personnel that they've been hiring, and they've been hiring folks that have been involved with drug transactions and et cetera. But the key piece, and I said this to my colleague, Mr. Allen, earlier today, a caller from you know, southern part of the upper Midwest, you would be surprised at the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, that have already been stolen. One of the things that came up in the discussion, all their inside sources that are telling, the companies that are managing the stadium for the state of Minnesota and for the taxpayers admitted, Mr. Allen, you need to know, in that story written by Rochelle Olson, which was really kind of slanted, is that they are handling so much money that they require 4 to 5 people to bring the money down as opposed to a single, quote-unquote, facilitator. And, man, money is just disappearing and et cetera, and what's going to happen is the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota and legislature are going to get stuck for the bill. Oops. But the key group of people that have not been paid, Mr. Allen addressed that on his website either late last night or early this morning, are people of color. Get paid.
Yeah.
And as Mr. Allen just said, a white woman in a meeting who had been relocated here from California by the company in Philadelphia. What are they called, Don? America Mine? America Media?
Airmark.
White woman told people in the meeting that they don't make mistakes. You know, Negroes didn't get paid, but one of those things. But they, America, do not make mistakes. Oh my God. But them folks ain't got paid. Now, on the other hand, also the many vendors that you know handle particularly the sale of beer and stuff like that, they really ain't getting paid. And now they're finding out that there are a whole lot of people that have not been properly vetted, if you will, and some of them cats is actually selling dope inside the stadium.
Oh yeah.
They're trying to keep it secret. They're trying to low key it. Monterey, which is a Mexican owned company out of Chicago, have been trying to keep a lid on it because they were supposed to be involved with another company in vetting the employees and et cetera. Oh, it's a trip, yeah, man. It's a trip.
Yeah.
But any other questions for you, sir? Appreciate your. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess just one other, just about the national election and what direction you think it's going right now. And how, I mean, I'm pretty sure I would think Minnesota would definitely be in Clinton's column, but I was just wondering your thoughts right now.
Let's ask my associate, Mr. Allen. Now, he's a Trump supporter, and I know some of us are getting a little nervous because it looks like Mr. Allen may have the last laugh. What's your take, Mr. Allen?
Well, you know, I have to, you know, we just deal with facts here, so I'm just going to have to resort to the interview that was done earlier in Ms. Hillary Clinton's green room before she gave a speech. Here we go. Okay. I'm sorry. I had to throw that out there.
Oh, that's
no,
dirty.
That's dirty.
That's terrible. By the way, I'm going to play World Series game just for our international audience and et cetera that are with us. Chicago up 6-3 on Cleveland in the seventh inning, in the top of the
Go Cubs, go Cubs.
Yeah, man, they'll be celebrating tonight in Chicago. By the way, you had asked me the question. Your people had sent me a text. I have to say this. I assume that both you and Mr. Allen are aware of it, and I was supposed to talk about it very quickly last week. We, last week prior to the program, had been in contact with the curator and archivist for the Oregon – Mr. Allen, I know that you'll love this, for the Oregon History Society and et cetera. And nice little white lady. In fact, they had a picture in last week's Portland Oregonian, the major big paper there, and she had these white gloves on and et cetera because she didn't want to ruin the document. She had the original copy, gentlemen, of the Oregon Constitution, and nobody likes to talk about it anymore. And by the way, this document was not amended until 1927. The document was affirmed and passed in 1857. But the Oregon Constitution, changed, modified, and et cetera, indicated that Negroes could not live in the state of Oregon. Did either one of you gentlemen know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
You'll find it in last Wednesday's edition of the Portland Oregonian. That's the top newspaper in the state of Oregon. I remember hearing some information on it way back in the day from some brothers out of Portland and et cetera. I didn't know if is it Steve? Yeah, they knew about it.
Yeah.
But yes, the Constitution, the original Constitution of 1857 in the state of Oregon, that great white liberal state, had indicated one of the ways to get around the issue of slavery. See, they were desperate to be admitted to the Union. That's when the battle was going on that the Congress was blocking any more states coming into the Union that were slave states. And so Oregon, Washington, California had actually been there for quite some time. And so they got very clever. And so what they put in their Constitution, and they sold a bill of goods to the Congress of the United States, and consequently in, 1859 or whatever were brought in, they said our Constitution does not allow Negroes to be brought in or live in the state of Oregon. And was not amended until 1927.
That's probably one of the reasons that Oregon has such a low black population today, too.
That is an interesting observation, sir, because that is exactly the reason.
I lived in Seattle for about
I lived in Seattle for about 3 years, and the people from Oregon, when we go down there heading to Modesto, California, go through Oregon, and
right.
the people just weren't right. They weren't right. When they ran, you ran into them and talked to them, especially in those fringe towns. If you were a shade darker than khaki, they talked to you like you had a tail.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in the military then. I was looking at them like, okay, I will headbutt you with this pistol. You know, I mean,
yeah,
what's wrong with you?
Yeah, you were Fort Lewis, you know? Right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Fort Lewis. Yeah. And we just,
Fort
Oregon
Lewis.
Was just the weirdest state. Just the weirdest.
Yeah,
we,
well,
we could drive
Steve,
around.
Steve, you're absolutely on point because one of the other things they did, there was a big flood there in Portland a number of years ago, and the existing Negro community, see, a lot of blacks had come into Oregon at the beginning of the Second World War, to work at the shipyards. That's where they built many of the big ships.
Yeah.
And the Negro community was put right on the edge of the Columbia River there. It ain't funny because over 600 African-Americans were drowned when the water broke and a dam broke in the little Negro community there in Portland in 1943 was wiped out. And so, sir, you're absolutely correct. You'd be commended because one of the reasons that the black population is so small in Oregon is that black folk really were not allowed to come into Oregon until the early 1900s.
Yeah. Mr. Edwards, this posted today is November 2nd. Posted
yes, sir.
At 7 p.m., five gopher alleged foot victims reached settlement. Restraining orders dismissed. Players could return to playing home games.
Oh, okay. So they got concerned about an appeal to the state appellate court and to the Supreme Court. That's good news. That's really good news for those young men who are being denied due process. Okay. I see.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you calling, and hopefully we'll have you back. Fairly recent.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Bye bye. Yeah, Mr. Allen, I thought you had. Got that in one of your history classes. I guess it's something we don't talk about in America, but Oregon was the only state did it and got away with it for 70 years that Negroes could not live in the state of Oregon.
Yep.
1857 to 1927, man. So what we've got any calls, Mr. Allen. Give that number in case we got anybody want to call to ask us any questions.
Sure. That number is... I'm sorry, Mr. Edwards here. I'm getting back in off the test. 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904 is the number. The phone lines are open. We have a couple people in the queue that are just listening. But, Mr. Edwards, we do have to find out what's going on and who's getting the cuts for this $4.2 million because we need to stop these people out there in our community going around talking about $35 million, you know, down at the nightclub, drinking a little bit, talking to their buddies, talking about the community got $35 million. The black community, and we'll say it solid here, did not receive $35 million. Again, the black community of Minnesota did not receive $35 million from the Minnesota State Legislature. What happened?
That is absolutely correct. And documentation provided by the funding source, which is the state of Minnesota, certainly confirms that. And I'm just trying to wonder at what point of any money are received, particularly when we hear that one of our agencies had to get a loan from the very powerful Summit OIC under the leadership of Louis King, one of the most powerful black leaders in the state. At this point, who obviously reached out, but has not been. I understand Mr. King and his organization has not been repaid.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. We're hearing sources are telling that it's starting to be a point of sore point there. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I just don't know because I repeat the narrative that I've certainly been advancing, and that is I just don't understand all of this violence in the midst of all of this prosperity. You know, I mean, we have so much prosperity. I mean, if you could have seen and heard the statements made on October 6th in the big shindig at the U.S. Bank Stadium in the main big dining room, I mean, they were eating, I repeat again, I mean, filet mignon, sirloin, crab, lobster, oyster, and and then each Negro leader was required to kind of get up and give testimony to the greatness of our friend, the now in Vice President of Internal Operations, Alex Tittle, and others, and they were, with the exception of Mr. King, I understand no one had the audacity of even thinking to have him make any references, though I understand that he was there, but folks knew better. But others were required to give testimony to the greatness of the diversity plan, which wasn't a diversity plan. And so I'm just overwhelmed, really, with the kind of propaganda that is taking place, and yet no one can deal with this problem as it pertains to what is happening to the African-American population. Like I said, with the shooting on Cedar, 34th and Cedar, early this morning, and I understand that victim is a Caucasian. I forgot to say that. The victim killed this morning, gunned down this morning, is a Caucasian.
Oh, no.
Yes. And so
they have all the forces
time.
Out on the street right now, Mr. Edwards. They have all the forces out looking right now for that person.
Oh, yes. They're
the police are relentlessly. They're
yes. Oh, no, that is definitely already happening. People are being rounded up, and I'm sorry that we didn't analyze and report that. But, I just assumed that the leaders knew and people knew and were texting each other and et cetera. But a Caucasian was shot and killed this morning. There's hell to pay. Now, in the meanwhile, we have at least, three or four black victims, including another African-American woman, grandmother, shot, killed in the crossfire. Not the intended target, shot through the chest as she was actually entering the car, as I understand it. Then we had the gentleman shot and killed, a gunman fired through his apartment door, if you will, seven times and hit him at least five times. And then, of course, we had a young man, father of three, working a well-paying job and et cetera. By the way, is in the process of owning and buying his own home along the 4,000 block of Colfax Avenue North. He was shot and killed on 48th and Bryant. And life just senselessly taken, and et cetera. And I have to say, Mr. Allen, you raised this question earlier in this program. I hear nothing from the organizations. If I could hear the kind of anger about the continued deaths of African Americans, particularly women, as I heard about the fact that you were allegedly giving out bad information, I maybe would have some sense of solace. But I guess it's just not important.
No, I agree.
And I just think at the end of this program tonight, by the way, that we should have an appropriate selection, particularly in memory of the African-American women that are being gunned down in this city. Oops.
Yeah, I agree.
But the phone lines are open. I was waiting for any kind of questions or challenges or inquiries or whatever. But like I said, everybody's watching the World Series. Now, of course, it appears that Chicago is going to win, but would that do anything for us here in Minnesota?
I don't know. They'll probably interview someone's cousin that played on the Chicago team. They'll figure out a Minnesota angle eventually.
Well, they won't. Now, you understand, Mr. Allen, because you're not a sports fan. They won't be getting nobody that played on the last Chicago team that played in the World Series. That was 1945. And the last time Chicago won the World Series was 1908. I don't think you're going to find nobody, unless you talk about a mummy, if you will. But what else do we have? We have a lot of things shaking in our city, a lot of development. Now, by the way, we're getting ready for the election, the city election and et cetera, 2017.
Yeah.
I do understand that Velma, that Miss... what you call it, former NAACP president, is getting ready to challenge Mayor Betsy Hodges. That's the word that's being circulated amongst millenniums and activists and et cetera. Nikita Libby-Pounds, former professor at, former professor at St. Thomas,
mm-hmm.
will be running, possibly running against current incumbent Mayor Betsy Hodges. Are you hearing anything
mm-hmm.
along those lines?
Yeah, I've heard that there was a fundraiser at the Kaplan on behalf of Nikita Levy-Pounds, Dr. Pounds, and, you know, that's what I heard, and I have some of my intel people checking in. A couple of elected officials are snooping around.
Well, now, wait a minute. The Kaplans, again, have turned on Betsy Hodges. That's the same way they did on then-Mayor Sharon Sales Belton when they turned on
mm-hmm.
her and threw their support to a guy by the name of R.T. Ryback and undermined Belton and
mm-hmm.
denied her a third term. The Kaplans, heavy players, man, heavy players. Yeah, heavy players. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that amazing? So they already had a fundraiser for the former NAACP president. Wow.
Mm. Yes, they did. So, I mean, that's what's going on. And then you have Elizabeth Woodruff, who might run. I don't know what Jackie Cherry Holmes is going to do, but I know that we got to get Mayor Hodges out of there, Mr. Edwards. And we
now,
get
well, I can't agree with that. I've seen the mayor try to do some things, and this is a tough town to govern. So I can't indicate that I wouldn't support her reelection, if you will. She's really tried to work and deal. Unfortunately, she's gotten some bad advice from from people who don't have her best interest, if you will. But we'll see what it is. But I don't think, Don, that we've had the kind of talk that we normally would expect leading into election year 2017. Are you kind of feeling that too? That everybody's being real quiet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, they're trying to wait till this presidential election is over with. You know, we wake up on the 9th. You know, we wake up on the 9th, and, our new president is Mr. Donald Trump. You know, people are going to pack up and move to Russia. So we're going to send McCain. We're going to send Mitt Romney, Miley Cyrus, Rosie O'Donnell. You know, there's already accounts online. Donate $10 so they can move, okay, because we want them to.
Are we going to send them to follow the leadership of President Putin? Oh, that's mean. That's mean-spirited on our part. That's really mean. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I noticed it's for a local election. It's been awful quiet for a state that is politically astute and specifically our leadership that is as astute as it is. We're hearing some challenges for the current. We need to be transparent. We're hearing there will be some significant challenges for the current incumbent Fifth Ward councilman. I do think that his challenger has returned from South Africa, where she was visiting and, I guess, researching, Miss Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Yeah, well,
yeah.
There's going to be another challenger, too. Rumor has it that Keith Ellison's oldest son is going to be running.
I understand.
Congressman
You're in the
Keith
fifth
Ellison.
Yes, I've heard that
yes.
For the last 3 or 4 months, that he will be a candidate. I wonder how his dad's going to support that.
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that will cause friction between, brown, black, and yellow kind of thing. But, hey, we're just trying to get the conversation started because we know there's so many of you out there that are having your meetings. Now, by the way, the precinct caucuses start in February, and I think the city convention is in March. So folks got to start rubber meeting the road pretty early because, we already are into, it is only the second day of November, but it is November.
Yeah, yes,
you
it
know,
is.
And,
it is.
Yeah, yeah. And so it is interesting. Don, just give that phone number right quick. Oh, hell, we're down to the last 6 minutes, but in case somebody wants to make a quick call, got any questions for us. About what we've been discussing about the money.
Yeah, 347-426-3904 is the number. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, I was on TV Monday.
I know. I mentioned it, Don. You must have been away for a moment. You were on Fatal Attraction.
Mr. Edwards, it wasn't Fatal Attraction. It was not Fatal Attraction.
It was Fatal Attraction.
No. It was called Justice by Any Means.
That comes on after or in between. That's right, Justice by Any Means.
Yeah.
Because
Justice
the deceased two sisters went out and put a lot of pressure on the Indianapolis Police Department. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
The young lady deceased, unfortunately, her last name was Allen. Now, she wasn't any relation to you, was she?
No, she was not. They called me up and asked me would I read some of the scripting for it, and I said, anything to get my picture and my name out there. And so they filmed downtown at the Marriott in the Carl Pollard Suite. It was pretty fun.
Now, when was that, last year or when? Because the murder took place in 2014.
That was summer.
Yeah, oh, that was this summer they wrote it.
Until the summer.
Okay. So they did it in the presidential suite or whatever, the imperial suite. And now, who else besides Jason Soule and yourself? Who else were persons here out of Minneapolis?
Well, Jason Soule wasn't necessarily in it. He was an activist there at the time, and they had a small 3-second piece of him in there.
Wait. Jason Soule was an activist where?
In Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis, Indiana?
Yeah, he wasn't really in the show per se like I was as a host. He was portrayed as I guess, you know, I got the DVD here. I'm gonna download it so that we can play it next week so you can hear that part. Yeah. So you can listen.
Was shown
to,
as an activist.
So
I had no knowledge that in 2014 Jason Soule was living in Indianapolis, Indiana.
So I'm gonna play that piece.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're moving in, but so the person, the deceased, unfortunately, she was not related to you, so it just happened to be the same last name.
No, she was not.
Yeah.
No, she was
okay.
not.
Okay. Yeah, that was a mean, predatory individual that they finally apprehended. That guy had a long criminal record and had murdered a couple other people and been able to get away with it. Of course, obviously they were black, so he was able to get away with it. They were lucky that DNA showed up on those sandals. That case would probably still be unsolved, right?
Yeah, I would agree. Yep, it sure would have. They would have known. And the next one that's coming out, Mr. Edwards, that I worked on is about the whining killer. He would call the police and start crying on the phone saying that he had killed a woman and put her body by the railroad tracks, and then he would hang up and go to a bar.
He was in what town? What city was he in?
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, he was here in St. Paul?
Back in St. Paul, Minnesota, back in the 80s. Yep.
You're not talking about the guy that was killing all the Native American women.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they were Native American women, but he was called the whiner.
The whining murderer.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be the city of St. Paul, St. Paul Police Department, Ramsey County Sheriff and them. Oh, okay. When is that supposed to air?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the next episode, next week, Monday.
Comes on Monday. Okay. All right. Now, what about the little blonde reporter, the so-called reporter? Because I noticed they stayed away from identifying what paper she worked for, as well as yourself, because you were also identified as a reporter. Now, neither one of y'all worked for the Indianapolis Star, did you?
No.
Yeah,
we were. Okay. I was identified as an investigative journalist. And so they sent me tons of stuff on the case I looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very, very interesting, you know, everything that happened. And we just went from there. So.
Oh, okay. All right. And again, that was not Fatal Attraction, but deals with citizens, relatives, and et cetera, that actually take up the cause and bring about some at least decent results of justice. That's really what it's about.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, then. Well, let us at least have a somber reflection in memorial of the African American women being gunned down in our city, Don. I think that'd be appropriate to wrap tonight's show on.
Yeah, I agree. We got something by Kirk Franklin here getting ready to play.
Everybody loves him. Go right ahead, my brother.
Yeah.
Take us home.
I'll be honest with you. Okay.